Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 790, January the 26th, 1987. Before I get into the broadcast, I want to thank you for articles that are being sent to me. Be sure to put the date that you read the article and the name of the newspaper that you got it from. I didn't used to do that years ago, but it is very important for research to find it or quote it if you put down the name of the newspaper and the date that it has come from. Hopefully next week I can clear out the relationship for you or try to make sense in 1 hour. The names that are in the news so much now, they're not in the television news, but in the printed page articles and newspaper and magazines, the names are appearing that are involved in the Iran-Contragate story. The common denominator among these, of course, is always Edwin Wilson and Michael Ledeen. But I'll try to get into the relationship of them to General Secord, Theodore Shackley, Thomas Kleins, Albert Hakim, John Singlaub, Eric von Marbod, and Ledeen. Their relationship, if I can in 1 hour set it straight for you a little bit, because it can get complicated seeing these names and not knowing exactly how they relate to each other. I got a telephone call last night that in Santa Cruz County today, January the 26th, the company called Advanced Genetic Scientists are spraying their frost ban on strawberry plants. These are the first genetically altered bacteria that are being sprayed anywhere in the world except where they tested them in Northern California and in Oakland. January the 27th, 1986, just a year ago tomorrow, there were hearings in Salinas. I did many broadcasts on AGS. The links of that company to Roman Haas, to IG Farben, to the very persons that made chemicals and gas for extermination in Germany, active in a lot of ways that could be detrimental to our health. One day after those hearings in Salinas, if you remember, on January 28th, is when the Challenger exploded, the shuttle Challenger exploded, and I followed parallel the AGS companies and corporations and the shuttle program connections. And then when William Graham, the chief administrator for the shuttle program, the day it exploded, changed jobs from NASA, he went to become science director for Ronald Reagan and works closely with and was identified in the New York Times as working with Mr. Beauregard from Harvard on the board of directors of AGS. And I also had through the past year the relationship of the shuttle program to experimentations, medical experimentations, working on AIDS, and a lot of other very interesting projects up there in space that involved Mrs. Judith Resnick, Miss Judith Resnick, who died on the spaceship Challenger. So throughout the whole year, AGS and the shuttle program were paralleling agents in particular, projects in particular, and then this past year they seemed to get the power with Mr. Graham in the White House to proceed to put their frost ban on strawberries, and they're starting in Santa Cruz County. Now, it isn't coincidental, I don't believe at all, that Wall Street Journal this morning had a editorial called Rifkin Sacked. They're referring to Jeremy Rifkin, who filed a suit 2 years ago at Judge Sirica to stop this genetically altered bacteria spraying until it could be found out by the powers that be just if how healthy it was and if it would harm the people if it was sprayed upon their food products. And this past year, Judge Giselle gave the go-ahead to AGS that they could go ahead and spray. So the Wall Street Journal had this long article today on how Rifkin was sacked, how he was put aside, that his lawsuits have to stop. But they don't have in the Wall Street Journal is that the same day that they have that editorial is when they are actually spraying in Santa Cruz County. The broadcast that I did, there were lots of them on William Graham of NASA and the relationship of him to AGS, which I think is not coincidental and very, very interesting. There's a new book out on the Challenger program, and a section of it was reviewed in LA Times magazine section January 18th. The book is by Joseph Trento and Susan Trento, and it's called Why Challenger Was Doomed. And William Graham, although he came in late in the program, just a few weeks before the shuttle went down, The book describes the Challenger program as being involved with politics, economics, egos, ambitions that are to blame for the Challenger. Well, if the same person that heads that organization goes on and decides about our health or our disease or our food products with these kinds of experiments, we, as a group of people touching their food or eating it or being near their sprays, could have the same disastrous effects upon our own bodies that the Challenger had upon those seven astronauts. William Graham went from NASA to the food program. Now, in this past year, there have been a lot of articles about the Challenger. I haven't updated those for you, but this is the anniversary of the explosion. There's a gentleman named Bob Bowen, Dr. Bob Bowen, who was a former Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. He headed the basic research into lasers in space. He worked for the Carter administration and then for General Dynamics. And I heard him speak on the Monterey Peninsula, and he claims that the reason for the cover-up of the fatal flaw that caused the shuttle Challenger crash last January was the Star Wars program that they were planning, the militarization of space, was behind the cover-up of the fatal flaw. Now, the Challenger went down on a Tuesday, and the following Monday, 6 days later, I started my programs with the controversies between Huntsville, Alabama, with the Project Paperclip Nazis that came over here with Puniman, with the desire to control the world, with the first strike offensive, and that they wanted to rule out civilians into the space program, and by testing the O-rings in cold weather, knowing that there probably was an 85 or 95% chance it would blow up, and testing it, they could put the program off for a year and thus turn the entire space program into military priority because they were, in quotes, delayed. So just this past December, in the newspaper, there was an article about Bob Bowman and working for the companies that help with the space program and claiming that the relationship of Star Wars to allowing this to blow up is very close, and that was on the button with what I was saying just a year ago. The two books out on the Challenger explosion so far that came out this month, one, as I say, is Prescription for Disaster, From the Glory of Apollo to the Betrayal of the Shuttle, by Joseph and Susan Trenton. And I've read many, about five or six reviews of this book, and I'll share more with you later on another program. I'll give you a chance to get the book first. And it has to do with a lot of the appointments that were made in the program, the politics of using a different kind of fuel than the one they knew was the best, not cutting costs, having secret contracts, and so forth. And that book goes into the taking of Mr. Fletcher from Utah to head NASA, and the Utah Mafia having the contracts with Huntsville, Alabama, and a Mr. Dale Myers came from Rockwell International to NASA, and Fletcher came from Utah to NASA, and they gave the contracts out, including Rockwell that got a primary contract for the shuttle program. Then Myers went back to Rockwell to work for them after he took time out to get them the contracts. And after the shuttle Challenger blew up, President Reagan had, of course, Mr. Fletcher come back into the space program to head it, even though he had set it up at a time when they knew it couldn't work and eventually would break down. They were lying about it all along in its capabilities. And they brought Mr. Myers back, who's now the deputy administrator of NASA. So the very people that caused the problems and the lying about it are back running it right now. Another book out that just came out is called Challenger, A Major Malfunction by Malcolm McConnell. And he claims that the flaws in the rocket booster seals that caused the disaster should have been investigated 2 years before, that they knew about that. And this book also goes into a lot of the problems and lies of NASA in trying to fulfill Ronald Reagan's dreams. And they only were dreams, and there's quotations in the newspaper of various people saying that this was something he promoted, particularly he promoted, and it had nothing to do with the speed with which they had to get the shuttles going that the Rogers Commission said, but there were flaws in the system that they knew would appear eventually. There have been quite a few articles recently. The San Francisco Chronicle had one on the erosion of the O-rings that they've known since 1984, that they should have been fixed and repaired, that they wouldn't hold up. And people high up in NASA ignored all of this. Mr. Lawrence Malloy and William Lucas of the space program ignored this. There's a lawsuit filed by Challenger astronaut, his father, Gregory Jarvis's father. He said, it's obvious the government does not intend to inflict any penalty upon Morton Thiokol. They were guilty of and were directly the cause of the Challenger disaster. Remember, the engineers said, you can't go in this cold weather. And the bosses at Morton Thiokol went against their own engineers, and he is suing Morton Thiokol for $75 million. There was another article January 16th in the New York Times. The temperature factor. Tests in the redesign of the shuttle rocket disclosed unexpected problems, and it has to do with trying to make heaters now to keep the O-rings warm because they were not at a safe temperature. And this is one of the things that I said all along, that the ordering for the launch came because of the State of the Union message, and it was cold, and they let it go up because even if it exploded, they could put off the program, but they knew that it couldn't hold up in that cold weather. There are interesting articles about Morton Thiokol battling to remain the sole maker of the solid rocket booster, or the booster rocket. This is in the New York Times, January 23rd. And they still want to have this lucrative government business. They were the ones who had the sole contract, and Mr. Fletcher, who headed the program originally, was from Utah. This article in the New York Times is about the mafia in Utah, and that even though they were blamed for letting it launch in the cold temperature and knew that the O-rings couldn't prevent the joints from opening up when it was so cold that the gas would escape, they recently got a $75 million bonus, Morton Thiokol, for their excellent work. They were supposed to pay a fine if the shuttle exploded, but they recently got a $75 million bonus. Now, I think this was a payoff because they took the chance that if it did blow up, they wouldn't be responsible. So you taxpayers have just given them a little extra goody for obeying the orders of the president to try and fly the night that he was going to give his little speech about the teacher. Now, that speech was written by William Graham in the NASA program. Remember that a year ago? Tonight, while I am speaking to you, a young elementary school from Concord, New Hampshire, is taking us on the ultimate field trip as she orbits the Earth as the first citizen passenger of the space shuttle, Krista McAuliffe's journey. That was written by William Graham, who's now in charge of science and advanced genetic sciences and the spraying of bacteria, live bacteria, on our food. Richard Cook of the space programs, he's heads the Institute for Space and Security Studies, has asked for a special prosecutor on this case. He asks in his newsletter, did the White House add to the pressure to launch? Did the pressure get passed on to Mr. Graham's subordinates? Who was responsible for the launch decisions? He claims the Rogers Commission didn't try to get to the bottom of these questions, and the cause of the Challenger's failure was extremely low temperature through the night and the effect of the cold on the O-rings. This is exactly 1 year after the Challenger went down. To appreciate these conclusions and lawsuits, you would have to play back or get a hold of the tapes that I did last year for the first 3 months in January when I was talking about the Challenger program. Also, Alton Keel was the liaison of the National Security Council and the chief investigator for the Rogers Commission, William Rogers being law partner with William Casey of the CIA. Keel went on to be deputy and then director of the National Security Council when Mr. Poindexter was removed. He's now got a high position in NATO. He took Mr. Abshire's place in NATO while Abshire came home to take care of White House business during the Contragate scandals, because Abshire and Richard Allen helped found the Georgetown Center for Strategic and International Studies, and it's their agents that are involved in the Contragate scandal right now, the Michael Adeen, Henry Kissinger team that got this president into the trouble he's in, and Mr. Abshire is there to translate for the president. Now, 2 weeks ago, January the 12th, I talked about that hidden government behind the National Security Council that makes decisions for the next 20 years. And this is very important. It is very, very important because people like Gary Hart, who wants to be a Democratic candidate for the next elections, is down marching this past week in Georgia and making himself visible with the civil rights movement and the blacks and so forth, but he comes from Colorado. He works with Daniel Graham of Star Wars, and Henry Kissinger, and what, no matter what he does on the surface for domestic scenes, if he were to be elected president or anybody's elected president, the decisions are being made for them 20 years ahead of time, and it is this team that has to be removed. The details of who knows what in the Contragate story are not as important as that secret team that keeps surfacing over and over again in almost every newspaper article about the event. Now, I cited last week an article in the New York Times, December the 17th, about a newly appointed commission on integrated long-term strategy. Long-term, as they identified it, is until the year 2001. And I mentioned Dr. Fred Ickley is in charge of this commission. Ickley is the one who worked with Colonel North. He's the one who works with General Singlaub. He sets up with the secret teams Edward Luttwak, who is the genius behind the coup d'etats, whether it would be Iran or Nicaragua, or previously, I could list 30 he's done. Edward Luttwak is on that team, and I've talked about him. And Ickley, according to the newspaper account, will be working with Henry Kissinger, always there arranging and managing our foreign policy years ahead, Zbigniew Brzezinski, William Clark, William Graham Clater, and Anne Armstrong. I mentioned their names in the New York Times article. The Washington Post carried another article on the same subject and added to those names and added some more very important information. And no matter what details I give on World Watchers in the past or in the future, it is these people who have to be extricated, because no matter whether it is a Democrat or a Republican, whoever is in the White House, they have made and are being paid $1 million in the next few months, this team, to make the decisions for the next 20 years. And they simply have to be pulled out. They are war criminals for what they've done in the past 40 years, most of them, but they have to be identified. And I want to share this with you. This article is called Long-Term Military Strategy, dated January the 11th, 1987. Now, the reason military strategy is important is that all the domestic funds for clearing the air, the water, the roads, the transportation, health, housing, are put off because military comes first. Ronald Reagan now, for every dollar he spends, is borrowing 70 cents, and it all is going to military, just about all of it. Okay, the article is by R. Jeffrey Smith. For the researchers or people that are interested, remember, the New York Times story on this same subject was December 17th, 1986. This is January the 11th, 1987, Washington Post. In an effort to shape future defense policies and rebut congressional criticism of his department's high budget requests, Caspar Weinberger, defense secretary, has formed a panel to chart broad guidelines for defense technology and strategy for the next 20 years. The panel of conservative defense specialists and retired military officers was unveiled during his testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee. He described top-ranging regional conflicts, counterterrorism to the Soviet Union, and strategic defenses. The aim of the report, that is to be made in classified and unclassified versions, is to set the agenda for military policy long after Ronald Reagan leaves office. Translated, it means, for all purposes, Ronald Reagan is dead, and when he was in office, he really didn't make these decisions. They were made ahead for him. But what they're telling you is that long after he leaves, don't worry about him. These are the policies, and this is what we need our money for. The committee, this is the one I described before, will be chaired by Fred Ickley. He comes from a Swiss banking family, current Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, and Albert Wallstetter, a former RAND Corporation executive and panel, along with Henry A. Kissinger and former National Security Advisors Zbigniew Brzezinski and William Clark. Now, those names I cited before, except for Wallstetter from RAND Corporation, and remember, Fritz Kramer shares offices with Fred Ickley, is the mentor of Brzezinski and Kissinger, and goodness knows who else, and that's why it's so important to know if that Fritz Kramer, who's faceless and never fingerprinted, was and is Adolf Hitler's top general, Fritz Kramer. That's why I keep mentioning how important he is, because Ickley shares this group, and Kramer shares offices with Daniel Graham of Star Wars and also with Fred Ickley. The article continues, the budget for this decision, for the planning, Caspar Weinberger has allocated $1 million for these people to sit down and plan for the next 20 years. One of the panel subgroups is charged with determining how national command authorities can control nuclear, non-nuclear war, how to attack key Soviet communication systems. Another is to locate at the implications of nuclear, chemical, and biological proliferation. And is to not locate, to look at chemical and biological proliferation. And this is why it is so important to find out if Israel and Shimon Peres and William Casey and Alexander Haig were behind the testing of the neutron bomb. And I'll do more on that later, hopefully this evening. They're going into chemical and biological weapons. Additional panels will examine topics such as the United States, Soviet threat to the United States over the next 20 years, the impact of new weapons technology on political perceptions and military operations, the interaction of conventional forces with offensive, and the word offensive comes out over and over again in the past week, offensive and defensive strategic weapons, because when we take our offensive position, which these people are planning for World War III, then something's going to come back at us, so there has to be a little defensive, but that follows the offensive. 50 specialists inside and outside the Pentagon will assist. Other members are, the 50 aren't listed, Ann Armstrong, who was mentioned in the New York Times article, W. Graham Clater Jr., who was mentioned in the New York Times article, but described as former Navy Secretary, current Amtrak President, retired General Andrew J. Goodpaster, former West Point Superintendent, retired Admiral James Holloway, former Chief of Naval Operations, Harvard Professor Samuel Huntington, Rockefeller University President Joshua Lederberg, retired Air Force General Bernard Shriver, and retired General John W. Vesey, formerly Chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff. So this report will cost $1 million. It will be in effect long after Reagan is here, so it doesn't matter whether he's Watergated out or Contragated out. And it will go into things like chemical, biological weapons, new kinds of weapons, and proliferation. Now, this past week in the Washington Times, January the 14th, was a picture and an article by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's on this commission, titled Southwest Asia, Next Hotspot. And it tells the United States should take 100,000 troops out of the NATO countries in Europe, shore up the Persian Gulf area, and start maintaining the water areas in Southeast Asia, and we can move our forces and totally decimate that area as we've done in Southeast Asia with Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam, as we've done in the Middle East with Iran and Lebanon and Syria and Kuwait, the chaos that has taken place there. And look at Central America, what we've done to El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and so forth. Brzezinski says that we have to modernize our offensive forces and so that we are able, that they pose a first strike threat to the Soviet Union. This is the big new Brzezinski saying this. And he talks about the deployment of limited strategic defense, space-based screen to destroy Soviet missiles in a boost phase, and how to attack the Soviet Union and get ready to pull away, as I say, from NATO, the next hotspot to ruin the globe. If you get a globe or a map, chalk off the areas that Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski and Fritz Kramer have decimated, and now they're announcing as of last week that the next hotspot, as if the Middle East isn't hot enough yet. Also this past week, January the 11th, was an interview with Weinberger, Caspar Weinberger, or statements about his request for military budgets in Washington. It's titled Stealth Weapons Emphasized. And Mr. Weinberger says, Ronald Reagan, under a new doctrine called competitive strategies, has accelerated the component of stealth, air, land, and sea weapons to force the Soviet to spend billions of dollars on defense. And again, this article says the Soviets will be forced to spend an enormous amount in new defensive systems over a span of many years while their existing enormous investment becomes obsolete. And this is the use of high-tech weaponry and, again, a first strike. And Caspar Weinberger says, talking about the stealth weapons, Weinberger didn't say in his report which aides wrote the report, but most of it he did himself. The Air Force has a fleet of stealth fighters in operation. The Air Force and Navy have land-based and carrier-based stealth fighters under development and a new generation of stealth aircraft that will confront the Soviets in the 1990s, and they will need new air defense systems or risk damaging invasion by the United States aircraft in wartime. It's spelled out there right in front of your eyes. Washington Post, January the 11th, Washington Times, their plans for the future. Executive Intelligence Review had a long article, about 4 or 5 pages long, June 19, 1984, 2 years ago, a neo-colonial scheme to destroy Asia. The conclusion is based on a two-part series, How Henry Kissinger and Associates Grabbed Control Over the U.S.-Asia Policy. That's Henry Kissinger, Fritz Kramer, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and it goes into the U.S. Department of State, Lawrence Eagleburger, who retired as Undersecretary for Political Affairs, working with Kissinger Associates, now on the board of course, Kissinger Associates, and getting ready to decouple from Western Europe as they drive into the Pacific to overthrow most of Asia and have it under their command. And this article cites what is called the O'Hara Study. Early in 1978, O'Hara was appointed on the Trilateral Commission by Henry Kissinger to head a Pacific Basin Cooperation Study. And this report is on taking over Southeast Asia from South Korea on down. And Kissinger Associates and Lawrence Eagleburger will be active in that. And it goes into their plans for Burma and the Philippines, and literally taking over the Pacific Basin under the aegis of Henry Kissinger. And, of course, Kissinger and Brzezinski are active with Fred Eakley, who shares space with Mr. Fritz Kramer. And I must remind you of this as we get closer to World War III, how these people have engineered us into that position. Even the very far right-wing Liberty Lobby has an article by Victor Marchetti. He wrote the book CIA Cult of Intelligence, and December 29th, a month ago, it's titled U.S. Strategists Target Soviet Leaders. This is about the United States planning a first launch attack against the Soviet Union, that it was planned by Zbigniew Brzezinski. It's titled Decapitation because it calls for destroying the leadership of the Soviet Union and murdering up to or more than 100 million people. It plans to kill massive numbers of people, millions of Soviet subjects, in particular ethnic Russians who dominate the Communist Party and control the government. And this project called Decapitation is under former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's now advising for the tune of $1 million for the team, the politics for the next 20 years. It's called Presidential Directive 59. It took place just at the end of Jimmy Carter's administration. It's put together by the Joint Chief of Staff. And, of course, Mr. Vesey, formerly the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is part of this committee. And Brzezinski calls, according to this story, killing Russians the appropriate thing to do. And Victor Marchetti, an expert on CIA and intelligence, says that he is obsessed with killing Russians, that he is a Pole who wants to kill Russians. In fact, they quote him at a Joint Chief of Staff meeting where the potential of a U.S. nuclear strike against Russia was brought up. He said, how many Russians would be killed? The briefer said more than 100 million Soviets would be killed. He said, no, I mean Russians, Russians. And Marchetti says, Brzezinski didn't care about killing Ukrainians or Soviet minorities. It meant ethnic Russians who accounted for one half of the USSR population, who he considered his enemy. And Marchetti says, this is the voice of 600 years of angry Polish history speaking. And he quotes other sources at the meeting. Of course, we're paying the bill for this. These lies will be on our conscience, and we may not even live to get the effect when the retaliation begins. And This is a long article on Zbigniew Brzezinski's obsession with killing over 100 million Russians with the agreement of the Joint Chief of Staff. The project is called Decapitation, cutting the heads off of the Soviet Union. And these are the people making the policy, according to the New York Times and Washington Post, for the next 20 years. We'll take a one-minute break, and I want to do a little bit more on this article by Victor Marchetti, just to point out the seriousness of this and the people like Fred Eakley, Brzezinski, and Fritz Kramer who are behind these activities.